The afternoon sun reflected off the concrete levels of the Seven Points parking garage in the uptown neighborhood of Minneapolis, casting long, sharp shadows across the pavement. It was a typical Thursday in early June, and the streets below were filled with the usual hum of city life. Pedestrians moving between shops and outdoor dining areas. Nothing about the atmosphere suggested that a specialized fugitive task force was closing in on a vehicle on the fifth floor. The air was still and carried the faint scent of exhaust and warm asphalt as I moved through the quiet upper decks. There was a profound silence that often precedes a high-stakes encounter, a tension that sits heavy in the lungs before the first radio transmission breaks the peace. I observed the way the light hit the rooftop level, illuminating a silver SUV that sat idling near the ramp. The scene appeared mundane to any casual observer, just another vehicle parked in a busy metropolitan center. Yet the positioning of the surrounding unmarked units told a different story. We were not there for a routine patrol or a simple traffic stop. The objective was clear, and the identification had been confirmed through several layers of surveillance. I watched the perimeter tighten as the specialized units moved into their final tactical positions, effectively boxing in the target vehicle to prevent any high-speed pursuit through the crowded streets below. Everything changed in a matter of seconds when the quiet of the garage was shattered by the rapid succession of gunfire, echoing off the low concrete ceilings. The transition from a surveillance operation to a lethal force incident happened with such speed that the surrounding environment seemed to freeze. In that moment of chaotic noise and sudden movement, the life of the man inside that silver SUV reached its violent conclusion. That man was Winston Boogie Smith. I began the process of reconstructing the hours and days leading up to that afternoon by reviewing the warrants and the specific mandates given to the United States Marshals Service, Fugitive Task Force. The investigation revealed that the primary reason for the confrontation was a felony warrant for a firearms violation out of Ramsey County. Smith had been under intermittent surveillance as authorities sought to take him into custody without a public pursuit. My review of the operational plan showed that the task force consisted of several local law enforcement agencies acting under federal authority, which complicated the standard transparency protocols usually expected in municipal shootings. I looked into the records indicating that Smith had posted several videos to social media in the weeks prior, expressing a deep distrust of law enforcement and a refusal to be taken back to jail. This digital trail provided a glimpse into his mindset. But the investigation remained focused on the physical movements of the task force as they tracked his silver vehicle to the uptown area. I documented the timeline of the undercover vehicles following him into the parking structure, noting that they waited until he was stationary and accompanied by a female passenger before initiating the arrest. The tactical decision to move in on the fifth floor was intended to isolate the scene from the public, but it also created a confined environment where every action would be amplified by the surrounding concrete. I examined the statements from the officers involved, who reported that they identified themselves clearly and gave multiple commands for Smith to show his hands and exit the vehicle. The lead-up to the shooting was a series of rapid escalations that lasted less than several minutes from the moment the task force pulled behind his bumper. I verified the specific roles of each officer on the scene, noting who was positioned at the driver's side and who was providing cover from the rear. The official reports detailed a moment where Smith allegedly reached for a handgun located within the passenger compartment, prompting the officers to discharge their weapons. The evidence collection phase centered heavily on the interior of the silver SUV and the lack of traditional visual records. I noted immediately that the United States Marshals Service did not require its task force members to wear body cameras at that time, a fact that would become a central point of contention in the public record. This meant that I had to rely on forensic ballistics and the physical evidence recovered from the seat of the vehicle to piece together the exchange of fire. I personally reviewed the inventory of items seized from the scene, which included a semi-automatic handgun found on the driver's side floorboard. Forensic analysis of the weapon showed that a cartridge had been discharged from within the vehicle, as evidenced by a spent shell casing found inside the cabin that matched the caliber of Smith's firearm. I examined the glass shatter patterns on the windows, which indicated shots being fired from both the outside in and the inside out. The medical examiner's report provided a detailed map of the trajectories, showing that Smith was struck multiple times by rounds fired from the service weapons of two specific task force members. I also took into account the testimony of the female passenger, who was in the vehicle at the time of the shooting. While she initially stated that she did not see Smith with a gun, the physical evidence of the discharged casing and the presence of the firearm provided a technical counterpoint that the investigation had to weigh. I looked at the surveillance footage from the parking garage itself, but the cameras were not positioned to capture the interior of the SUV or the specific hand movements of the occupants. This lack of video evidence required a meticulous reliance on the gunshot residue tests and the positioning of the recovered projectile fragments. The technical data suggested that the encounter was brief and extremely violent, with dozens of rounds fired by the task force in response to the perceived threat. I cataloged the biological evidence found on the handgun, confirming through DNA analysis that it had been handled by Smith. The legal resolution of the case followed a standard but intense review by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office and the Minnesota Attorney General. I tracked the proceedings as investigators from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension took over the primary inquiry to ensure an independent assessment of the use of force. After months of reviewing the ballistic reports and the officer's statements, the prosecutors announced that there was insufficient evidence to bring criminal charges against the officers involved. The official determination was that the officers acted in self-defense and in defense of their partners when they observed Smith brandishing a weapon. I noted that the legal closing of the case did not quiet the public outcry, as the lack of body camera footage remained a significant hurdle for community trust. The finality of the investigation confirmed that Smith died from multiple gunshot wounds, and the manner of death was ruled a homicide, which is the standard medical classification for a death caused by the actions of another person. The legal outcome was further solidified when federal authorities reiterated that the task force had followed the established protocols for apprehending a wanted felon. I reviewed the final sentencing of the investigation, which effectively cleared the officers of any professional or criminal wrongdoing. The silver SUV was eventually released from evidence, and the parking garage level was reopened to the public, leaving only the patched bullet holes in the concrete as a reminder of the event. The case files were eventually moved to the archives, marking the end of the formal state and federal oversight into the shooting. This investigation concluded with the determination that the use of lethal force was legally justified under the prevailing laws of the state and the federal guidelines for task force operations. The records show that the incident led to a direct change in policy, as the Department of Justice soon after mandated the use of body cameras for all federal task force operations to prevent such an evidentiary gap from occurring again.